Croat guided me to a huge viewing screen, and he entered the information for the screen expertly. He instructed the computer to display views and demonstrations of my body. Promptly my body appeared on the viewing screen and was taken apart into many pieces, divided into sections. And it was demonstrated to me how it was calculated, how they calculate, and how they search in a living man's body by techniques they had already mastered for a long time. Croat asked the male being from Satanese to stand on top of the plate where I stood before. After that, Croat manipulated the computer and searched for the part to begin the demonstration with all the parts of the body. Very quickly the Satanese body positioned itself next to mine, and I acknowledged and became aware that the right arm was missing on the Satanese, and that on his right leg the knee was missing. Now a technical design began to form. Instead of the cut-off limbs were fine technical drawings of microelectronic functions. Teams of functions appeared on the viewing screens, and the connections with our nerves to the missing limbs was shown. The connections from the artificial limbs to the nerve connections of the living body was shown, and the synthetic limbs were connected. A drawing showed how it was measured, calculated and connected to all the living nerve cells of the human body. I looked at the drawings of a very highly modest microelectronic process. Croat told me how the accident happened. Now and then a visiting team came to the fruit plantation in the mothership. One time he used an outside lift that carried him to the farthest part of the plantation. But since it was a small operation, this particular lift was used rarely. And also because in the past some other small motorized equipment had damaged this lift unit. The two of these motorized bodies smashed his arm and his leg when they came together on the plantation. Microelectronic technicians and doctors built him new limbs that were not any different in function than the natural limbs, as well as the color and the normal limb as it would look. Everything was restored by our specialists. Chapter 13, Demonstration of Chtnish Technology. Croat now entered into the computer instructions to connect it to a part of the physical, chemical laboratory. Immediately I was able to see, it was demonstrated on the viewing screen, with various different techniques. They searched and they looked and penetrated this stone I had brought with me. The stone was fastened on some gadget or device and they were doing their research. I saw as a fine beam of light entered this hard stone and was able to cut right through it, smooth as a polished mirror. It was magnified especially for me, my little stone. From there they laid half of this stone on a shiny plate, and they put the other half in a bowl that was made of special materials. Another beam of light hit the stone on the plate with a flash, like lightning, and it dissolved into vapor. The other half of the stone, that was put into a bowl, had a strong fluid poured onto it. Gradually a flowing mass was developed from this half of the stone, and this flowing mass was poured into a special bowl-like device, a square vessel. After a few minutes a wonderfully beautiful new stone appeared in a square, and that new cube of stone appeared in the square bowl. After invisible powers were released, new energy fields entered my new square stone. Energies that were in the atmosphere entered. Seconds later the stone returned to its original shape, and the stone paled as though a barely visible vapor followed it. And strangely, I could see the stone clearly through the vapor as the vapor gradually disappeared. The plate was now empty, but my stone appeared on another distant plate and was whole again. The next experiment demonstrated something with water. Normal water, purified and highly concentrated, was pressed into a device that could penetrate all hard and soft material and create the finest of holes, so fine that a human hair could not pass through. It is a technique that is utilized in this microelectronic science. Because the fine water ray has the ability to cool at the same time, the imprints of all the constituent materials can be seen and analyzed without destroying the layers underneath. After that, Croat showed me sound waves and how they were utilized. He snapped his fingers and asked me if I could hear it. I said yes. See, very simple sound waves emit as they are being produced by snapping the fingers. But now I will show you how even very simple sound waves are capable of all kinds of work. Totally normal sound waves are going to be amplified thousands of times and we will have useful power, and I will show you how the human voice can affect us in very healing or very destructive ways. And how the sound waves are utilized when they 61 are properly controlled. Properly controlled, they can heat or cool. What couldn't the utility company do with it? And now he demonstrated how the same sound waves amplified 1,000 times could do all kinds of work. Kroetke instructed the computer to demonstrate such capability. When Kroetke explained to me the function dash what and why was going on, I would have thought of a few gigantic blasts on a trumpet, which would flow out of a great cavity. I saw how this sound wave trumpeted properly could move a hill, how it pushed with ease like a wind in different directions. Kroetke showed to me another great machine that stood in the laboratory. He said, "This machine functions on short sound waves with unbelievable energies that are directed to it. With this machine," he said, "you can, for example, make air that is normally invisible to the human eye become visible. And the physical scientist can recognize what is air. On the viewing screen of this laboratory machine, directly transferred, I saw the air of the laboratory appear like a very light vapor, something like seeing through a sheet of glass, but this glass was fractured and behind it the air was boiling. This is how it was made visible and what it looked like in this example. The broken glass and the boiling behind it was made especially visible, but the fractures seemed to be visible only when there was static. The rips in the shards are of significance because one can magnify them, and because of that a time tear or hole would appear. And because of that one was capable of flying to any point or place in the past, as well as in the future. One can visit other times through this time stairs. And so you can see that through this ability you are capable of visiting new and far away worlds with the greatest of ease. If you transgress against the fundamental laws of nature, then you would be absolutely and completely lost, disappeared." With this explanation, Kroetke confused me completely. This far I was able to follow the explanation halfway, but now my brain gave up. It was like I was bewitched. I felt mentally paralyzed. Naturally, Kroetke was prepared for my mental incapacity. He interrupted his demonstration and together we sat down next to Duglo, who had already served a refreshing drink for us. I believe in the time that Kroetke and I drank our juice, that Duglo organized my brain again, as I would have run out otherwise. After a short pause we sat down again in front of the big viewing screen. Still to be seen on it was the unending space of the cosmos. Worriedly concerned, Kroetke asked me if I am all right, and I motioned yes. "Good, then we can continue." He motioned toward the viewing screen, typed instructions into it to stop at a point and display the technology of the time hole, and how it was created was demonstrated. It was as usual only a few seconds after that that the screen changed again. A being of the Pallian planet then 62 appeared and began gradually entering the needed data to expand and multiply the size of the time hole, the passage through time. "Pay attention, Andreas, soon you will see how this is being activated." Kroetke motioned toward the big viewing screen where the being of the Pallian planet sat. It was focused in on our objective. Shortly after this the desired picture was in the foreground. Kroetke addressed the viewing screen again, and now Istik was placed in the viewing screen. Soon the picture changed and seemed to be boiling, as if a smoker were blowing into the screen. Suddenly a great amount of tears, rips, appeared. The biggest rip was about 5 centimeters long on the screen and as wide as a pencil. I got the impression that the screen emitted a heat wave and was therefore torn and ripped. The pointer stick indicated a top right area edge. There a pink color appeared and 3 marked tears, each 5 centimeters long and 2 more some 10 centimeters long. Slowly the rips were magnified and expanded bigger and bigger. Kroetke asked me to focus my concentration on those rips. Soon I noticed what moved between those rips. What you now view, Andreas, we call secondary time splits. But also this is matter. It exists only in a different form. This time split also allows us to magnify many times, and time and speed then act in such ways as I now explain. You now can look out of the window, and run in the yard and you can weigh yourself, to watch yourself, so you can synchronize the events. As before, I listened very carefully to Krotk with much attention, but I could not at all comprehend what he said. They didn't expect me to understand all now. They were aware that this was much too complicated for me. This technical demonstration was way beyond my capacity to understand. Krotk knew, naturally, of the weakness of my brain capacity. And he was not at all holding it against me. On the contrary, he patted me in a comradely way on my shoulder and comforted me, commenting that at some time in my life I would hear about such things. He was completely sure that the humans on Earth are about to develop such technologies. He continued, "Rockets and airplanes are already on the threshold of such capacity. One day the humans themselves will be able to have the ability to travel far into the universe, but before they can do that, they also have to create all these technical preparations that we use now, and they have to create the bases from which we work now. Without these bases, it is not possible to undertake short-time or long-term space travel. To enlarge a time tier, I cannot demonstrate for you now because it takes a great deal of energy for that. What you have seen so far is, of course, not everything. This preparation also allows for many far more powerful defense weapons. It has that capacity. 63 Naturally, this functioning we can use in many various and different ways. As you have seen, we can expand secondary time holes. We can create them. When we create equally at the same time, a powerful magnetic field, then we can utilize successfully the weapon of waves of rays. But these waves of rays can only be experienced at a maximum of 2,000 meters distance. Everything that the magnetic field touches will then break down, so that an object converts into dust. Water can disappear in steam immediately. Humans and animals die immediately and equally turn into dust. As soon as Krotk ended his lecture to me, the Pallian being brought a 20x20 cm square object on a tablet into the room and handed it to Krotk. Krotk asked me if I knew what sort of material this object was made of. I was of the feeling that it was made out of some kind of metal. A shaped metal, because it really looked like metal, and he then said, "Yes, it actually is made of metal. Take this aqua object into your hands," Krotk asked me. I did take it from the tablet and was astonished at how light it was. Originally it had to be a massive metal, but now it has the weight of only a piece of wood. "Please take both of your hands and turn the object. Turn it around," he instructed. I turned the rare object around as Krotk requested, and without any resistance this square metal object turned into grit, like sand in my hands. A few seconds later on the tablet lay a little heap of powdery residue. I was fascinated and absolutely shocked at what this machine could do as a weapon. In the end, Krotk instructed the computer to produce a drawing of a flight, to demonstrate how these powerful flying objects functioned. The viewing screen was activated and changed, and strongly indicated the unending wide universe, with millions and billions of brighter and dimmer glowing stars. A red stone was running into many speeds with the mothership. Now I saw strong lightning effects aimed at the few hundred tons of this huge colored stone, and it fell into particles of dust, into a huge, many hundred thousand kilometers of space. It is a very powerful energy source, as powerful as the sun of your Earth. It has the capacity to produce sun-like energy. Chapter 14, The Mothership. The interior heartbeat of the energy supplier is the life of the mothership. The mothership is guided and powered by a form of vacuum fusion. The energy supplier was the heart in the mothership. This vacuum fusion could generate a very high power output. It was higher than that of the Zubringer, and was almost infinite. Krotk explained to me that the stars, as well as all other bodies that fly in the universe, are in actuality only a very small part of the actual mass that makes up the universe. The rest of the mass, the part that is invisible to us, all that the human eye sees as black, is a bigger mass. From this that we see as black must the energy be extracted, which animates the fusion mechanism and the antimatter mechanism that is necessary. Again, I could not follow at all what Krotk was trying to explain to me. My schooling was not adequate to prepare me for complicated explanations. Somewhere in my future life I will experience more of this and then probably I will remember all the explanations of Kroetke, I thought. It naturally did not escape Kroetke that I was in deep meditation on this whole meaning. He patted me friendly on my shoulder and said, "Your ability to comprehend and understand what I explained will arrange itself in time." He looked at the viewing screen and I followed. Gradually, the gigantic cloud of fog and roiling vapor disappeared. Now they became visible and appeared on the viewing screen a very brilliantly illuminated yellow glowing star, which pushed itself into the foreground and gradually became what appeared to be a gigantic spaceship in the form of 11 powerful rings. These rings were connected by long pipes or tubes that ran from the outer edge to beyond the first tor inner ring, and entered a huge powerful round ball of light. This huge ringed wonder candle pulled millions of tons of heavy supercity with unimaginable speed through the roots of the eternal universe. "That, Andreas," said Kroetke, full of pride, "is our mothership. There we live as we travel throughout the universe and many dimensions. It does apply to many conditions and things, and dimensions which one needs to live. Look at it carefully and you will never forget, as it will be stuck in your memory and even in your dreams will forever remind you." I was impressed. While Kroetke was explaining a few more technical details, I was speechless. I believed my brain would overheat, like a motor under load. Everything was so amazing, unimaginable. The mothership is from point to point, one end to another, about 600 kilometers long, Kroetke said, and on the rings it has a diameter of about 510 kilometers wide. And even just the complex of the power unit is by 65 itself of a size of approximately 7 by 8 times 11 kilometers squared mass, including the connected vacuum fusion automatic works. The vacuum energy machine, though it is a mass of millions of tons, is capable of going 1,940 times the speed of light. Only with such speeds are we able to enter other dimensions, worlds and universes. We can penetrate such only with such speeds. Each of the 11 rings have within them, whole complete worlds of being within themselves. The mothership houses about 1.5 million beings with highly differentiated views of life and culture. Their life systems are big enough to provide native environments for each of the hominid races as it exists on their original home planets. The spacecraft which I saw was the smallest of its type, but the fastest in its class. The citizen occupants of this mothership are protected by its very effective weapons systems. At any time, as necessary, they are fully capable of mastering unforeseen situations. The mothership can within a few nanoseconds create and erect mighty protective shields, and through these protective shields they can shoot these terrible weapons, but it has never been necessary to utilize these weapons that can pulverize all. To complete the weapons defense capabilities of the mothership, belong also these shuttlecraft of this Zubringer type. From these shuttlecraft that support the mothership there will be flying constantly a few universum smaller, disc-shaped, craft, around the shuttles. There are always a number of the smaller universum ready for action. All 11 hominid races that Kroetke told me about, are capable of maintaining and feeding themselves. Each being who lives upon the mothership can be counted upon to defend it as necessary. These words were barely spoken when in the viewing screen appeared a small indescribably gorgeous paradise. There were fruit and vegetable plantations, and gigantic wheat and grain fields of very efficient types, all visibly growing in a glowing tender green and a lively golden yellow colors as well as very brightly colored fields of flowers that divided the grain fields. These flower plots biologically protected the grain fields from possible crop destroying bugs and creatures. They also supplied the fields with nutritious vitamins and minerals. Also visible were little cultivated lakes where different kinds of fish and water creatures were farmed, which broke the order of the landscape. This lent variety to the artificial environment. In this beautifully created paradise there were useful insects and small animals of all kinds. A very unusual bird was constantly digging into the soil to hungrily eat worms, but I noticed that it could not fly. There were no birds as large as a turkey, or goose, or even a duck from our world. As soon as this bird turned his neck around, I had to laugh. Krotk also laughed at the sight of this unusual bird. This represented the first successful cross of three animals. This unusual animal is a hybrid and it cannot multiply well, but because it is a very useful animal it is allowed to live. Now I fell silent. My imaginative capacity left me. Krotk quickly added. 66 I know you are having difficulty in making sense of all this in your brain. That's why we shall take a small break, a little pause to rest which we give occasionally, okay? Alright, now we are going to eat dinner, said Diglo. The elevator brought us downstairs in a few seconds. Before we exited the elevator Krotk touched my on the wrist and pointed toward the door. We both went out and entered the dining room that was already opened for us. Immediately I smelled the sensuous lovely fragrances that invited us to our evening meal. On the plates of this culinary delight as we arrived, what surprised me most was the incredibly rich and bountiful spread, filled with all kinds of beautiful and wonderful dishes. Underneath glass covers were separated blossoms, as well as fruits and fresh green vegetables of all kinds, and a fish platter, all of which produced an evening meal in the most glowing colors. Between these dishes there were small little bowls with green spice plants together with various different little fruits as well as drinks of the most different kinds. With fascination I viewed the table and food, and wondered if all of this was edible. Naturally one can eat all of that, Krotk answered. The blossoms, for example, will animate and help the circulation, and also will help digestion and the blood. These blossoms will have a calming effect on the nerves. The different little herb plants will give strength to our bodies, will make them stronger. The fruits there will clear out our stomach and intestines, which also regulates all else. Quietly and secretly I watched the one who was controlling the spaceship while he was eating. It was very amusing for me to see how these pink-colored blossoms and blue-edged petals were tasted, to see how interesting the taste sensation was. After that they took those little plants, of herbs, uncut, after each bite, and then they reached very deliberately and slowly for their drink, and guiding it to their mouth took big sips from the glass. After that they moved their mouths in a very unusual way where their bottom lips were pushed forward, over the top lip, and I couldn't suppress my joking thoughts about it. Diglo has again caught my thought. With a little smile she reached out and gave me her glass and a little glass bowl with two blossoms in it. They were pink and blue. Together with the other little herb plants and also a carbonated drink, she gave that to me, and one to Krotk also. Taste one of these little plants, said Krotk, and he took one out of his glass bowl. Suddenly all the beings were watching me as I carefully put this blossom and the herb plant in my mouth. As I began to chew on it, the most explosive taste sensation struck my tongue. It tasted like honey, and 67 parsley and lemon, but the longer I chewed, the more oily the taste became. That numbed the inside of my mouth so that I pulled my mouth together. Quickly, I reached for my drink that went with it and drank it down very heartily. Even though I tried to keep my mouth normal, the same thing happened as with the other beings. I couldn't control my mouth parts anymore. After I swallowed all this I felt a sensation of vibration enter my body which quickly gave me a most pleasant feeling. Now they were amused by my reaction because I must have looked very funny to them. They relaxed and continued their evening meal. As usual, everything was very easy, but this time nobody began one of those lively and heated discussions, because our time rushed on. Krotk and I got up and walked to the elevator. As we arrived in Diglo's office, each being sat himself down in his original place. Diglo had not seated herself completely when she touched something on the control panel and a new program appeared on the viewing screen. Chapter 15, History of Writing. Now the Nezen being will instruct you, Diglo said, she will begin a new theme. If you become tired we will break, Okay, after these words the being from got up and stood herself on the square plate where I stood before. She gave the computer instructions to show some writing examples. Immediately the viewing screen turned to a gentle pink color and then turned dark. And then the desired object appeared on the viewing screen in 6 different same-sized little boxes. In the upper right box one could see 42 writing characters. It was a mixture of symbols and lines and points and circles in very erratic lines. We will show you in a small excerpt how the communication on your Earth developed, and now in all probability will continue to develop. The written letters that you see in the upper boxes are those that we use in our own community today. These are the written signs of 11 human races in our spaceships that we fly all together. Even though each human race has its own language, here we all use the same writing code. Each being who comes with us and travels with us must master these writing codes of our mothership language. When about 70 million years ago the United Earth humanity existed, that developed from the forest and the marsh races, they used similar written letters, but as the various different visitors left Earth, there were only a few thousand new human beings left who had mastered and understood the written form of the foreigners, because they were only servants of the visitors, the non-Earth humans. After a few hundred years there appeared a new written language. A few different languages became lost in time and new expressions were lost as well. The computer filled in the empty fields next to the 24 symbols. It was geometric symbols of written signs. Next to it were 10 to 12 number ciphers. We are now skipping back to the young part of the Earth humans, to a time when they were given and taught a new written language. Later I will demonstrate a few more things about these signs. A long time ago, about 937,000 years, nearly a million years ago, disappeared the biggest part of the Satanian beings from the Earth. The Satanians who left took the most developed and intelligent Earth human beings as their servants and they were taught this new written language. Because of the various diseases of this time most of these Satanians died out. After that the former servants of the Satanian race had raised themselves to a level where only the servants could master the written language of the Satanians. 69 Gradually the smaller communities grew into bigger communities, but only the helpers of the headmasters were allowed to learn the written language form. One day these communities became so big that they had to divide themselves, and different parts went into different regions. But in their new regions the written language was changed. For that reason the various different written forms appeared. The written form was now the main form of expression. The computer called it writing form in the empty little boxes on the monitor screen. About 80 to 100 written forms appeared. One flying Saurian symbol appeared and above it was the sun. It was the only sign that stood by itself in a box. All the different signs were combinations of various different symbols, and symbols of the ant. The bee and the elephant often appeared as companion symbols. Beyond that there were symbols of only single and double lines, as well as bows and up to 10 points. These writings expressed the richest information. But this writing did not survive because of its many different picture symbols. The computer continued. Partially this old symbol writing mixed itself and was reduced to a few generally understood signs. This reduced writing began to represent understandable signs, and when that appeared it began to maintain itself among some of the folk. This particular writing was very different from the symbol writing for which the group of signs and symbols was evolved. Geometric symbols like triangles and circles, and rectangles, six-sided and other geometric figures were the wear, for example, fish, crab and snake images, and balls with lines and points, were the, which were drawn into them and would form the most completely different combinations. About 40 to 50 different signs would appear in one little box next to the picture writing. Only the leaders and their servants in their little folk society would master this new picture writing for many hundreds of years. Somehow it mixed itself with the older symbol writing. This mixed writing was building a new foundation for newer written languages. These newer forms in time adjusted themselves to some of the older symbols. In the last little box one could distinguish Kisha and Celtic writing symbols. These signs only survived a few hundred years and then they disappeared. Then came the speaking runes of the Celts, which developed into a spoken language faster than the written form. Slowly the more expressive spoken language was pushing in the background on the symbol-rich written language. It would dominate the old Celtic language.